Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, how y'all doing? Is everybody on? Let me see. Can y'all hear me? Hey, how y'all doing? Can y'all hear me?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay.
How about me?
I got you. I see I had to cut y'all mics on.
Oh, is that what happened? It's just... I'm trying to see if I can still do it from the computer. It just was kept saying connecting.
That's what mine was saying too.
I ended up changing my Wi-Fi. Let's see.
You on now though? We on air.
Okay. I was still trying to do it from the computer, but I guess it doesn't really make a difference. So I apologize.
All good. So, hey, everybody, how y'all doing? This is Big Sir here on behalf of Another Chance Foundation. Just here to share with you all about really our reason why. Why do we choose to work with Another Chance Foundation? I have two amazing guests on here with me, and I'll allow them to introduce themselves and share a little bit about themselves here. Lisa, I to one to take it away.
All right.
Go ahead, Lisa. No, it's okay, go.
We'll probably be saying that for a while, so I will go ahead and go. I'm trying to get familiar with this blog talk. I haven't been on this thing in years, and I hope you guys can hear me okay. This is Tawanda, and I'm definitely glad to be on the call tonight with you guys and glad to be a part of Another Chance Foundation. I was blessed to be connected with this organization probably almost 13 years ago, trying to help some people that was actually incarcerated. So love helping people. I've been doing that my whole life. So glad to be on here tonight and looking forward to just being connected.
Okay, well, I'm Lisa. And the reason why I got into working with Another Chance was because The road I was headed down, it was kind of like I can relate so well. And then my best friend, she's currently locked up and she's doing like 20 years. So it's a blessing, and it's always, to be blessed, you have to be a blessing, and it's a blessing to work with you guys. So that's a little bit about me.
Well, that's great. Definitely appreciate both of you joining us here. Just to tell you a little bit about myself and why I chose to join Another Chance Foundation. I work with young men who are involved in prison and some coming out, and we're kind of a second chance program for them. But also I have an older brother that's in prison right now in federal prison. So it's definitely been on my mind to reach out to that prison community and help in some form or fashion, be a mentor, which really was my goal. Ended up connecting with Mr. Wanda and had similar passions to really seek to help people. So I think everybody on this call has that passion. So I'm so excited to be on an amazing team and with some amazing people seeking to bridge the gap between the prison and the community, but also help people with so many other things they're going through. One thing I want to bring up right now, we know the coronavirus is having a huge impact in our prison system. I talked about it a bit on my last blog, but just wanted to hear from you first, Tawanda, and you second, so you can add what you guys think about the coronavirus and the impact it's having on our country, our communities, in specific our prison communities as well.
That is definitely a million-dollar question. And to be honest with you, initially when I started hearing about it, I really thought it was just not really a joke, but just really in disbelief, kind of brushed it off, like, this can't be serious. And after probably a couple of days and hearing the numbers grow in the Atlanta area with 100 cases, 200 cases, oh, somebody died, I was like, wait a minute, like, this is crazy. Like, we're living like it's something in the movie. So it really just has been very, you know what I'm saying? Like, something you see on TV with something that happens in a different type of world. But so, yeah, it definitely was a shock, disbelief, and then acceptance and understanding, like, okay, this is really happening, so we need to get prepared. Hearing about getting your Lysol, getting your wipes, washing your hands, going home, not coming out, and saying, like, oh, my God, like, what is going on? So it's really been very alarming, very devastating to watch the news and hear all the different things going on, especially in 2020, because 2020 is the year, to me, of a vision, of opportunity, and I'm pretty sure so many people have said, ah, man, when 2020 comes, I'm doing this and I'm doing that. No one said I'm staying at a house for 8 weeks or 12 weeks. So, yeah, it's really been a huge shock. And then after I kind of settled from the shock and started talking to some of my brothers and sisters that's in prison, I'm like, whoa, okay, I can slow down what I'm doing. I can go in the house. I can go get water and tissue and sit in the house for a month. However, someone that's in prison can't really be as protected. So that was very alarming. So in talking to so many people on the inside, it's been crazy. Hearing from people, I got one friend that I've been building with for years. She's actually coming home on May 15th. She said, man, Tawanda, I'm almost at the door, man. They should just let me go. Like, let me go home to my family. And I'm like, well, that makes sense. Like 45 days. But guess what? It hasn't happened right now. And hearing people talk about they don't know what they're going to do, people that have illnesses. One guy says, I'm already in bad health. I got renal failure. It's just really been devastating. It's been devastating. It's been overwhelming. You know, hearing from families on text messages and phone calls, families are alarmed. It's one thing to have a loved one that's in prison. It's another thing to have a pandemic and have a loved one in prison. Like, it's been a nightmare. It's been literally a nightmare. And the last thing I want to say is this, but God. And that's what I had to remember and put in focus, like, okay, Lord, I trust you. And I know that you're with us every step of the way. So regardless of what happens, God is still with us. And that is what helped me put things into perspective. So I'm not worried. I'm praying. And I'm praying one for another.
Yeah, like Tawanda was saying, like, that's kind of like how I'm going with it. Like, I'm not panicking at all because I believe in God. And if people read their Bibles, like, you would see that this day was to come. And then I'm also a conspiracy theorist. So I think this is like man-made government type stuff. So I'm not panicking, not to sound harsh, like I'm not concerned. But where my concerns are is, like, in the prison area to where, you know, some people, they don't have money to call home and let people know what's going on. Because, you know, some of the sinks don't even work, and then the toilets don't flush. So on top of all of that and the coronavirus, like, it's scary. And that's where my heart goes out to because, again, they have limited resources. But for everything else, it is crazy, but God is in control, so I'm just going to let him do what he do.
Amen.
Yeah, you know, I've been reading a lot of different articles about what's going on in the prison community, just trying to stay up to date. And prisoners are afraid, and really why is because they can see that the COs, the wardens, the people running the prison, they're unprepared. They don't know what answers to tell the prisoners.
Uh-huh.
They don't know what to say.
Uh-huh.
That's a huge deal right now. And like I said, I don't want to be the one to bash leadership, but leadership has to start making some better decisions and the tough decisions.
Uh-huh.
And we all have to live with that. So that's kind of my take on it. Like I said, my brother's there. He called me the other day yelling on the phone, talking about he in lockdown and stuff like that. And so I'm not sure if they have any cases there yet where he's at, but just thinking about him and thinking about so many others who are way older than him who have those underlying health conditions, man, it's really serious that they start making steps now before that pandemic really hits our prisons hard. But so, yeah.
And one thing, Deontay, I wanted to piggyback off what you said in reference to being prepared. Unfortunately, we wasn't prepared as a country. You know, we were weeks late, and so I don't know, like, I'm sure the prison had some type of emergency evacuation or, you know, when certain things happen. But I've gotten emails from prisoners like, hey, no one knows what to do here. People ask me questions. There's places where it's passing out bleach. Some places aren't doing anything. When we are responsible for people, just like a parent is responsible for a child, when you are a correctional officer, you are a warden, you are responsible. Because guess what? This person can't leave. They're there. Then you have a certain level of responsibility that you need to make sure that somebody's good. I mean, literally, you don't want anybody's blood on your hands. And that's the way we should treat these people in prison, just like we would our loved ones, because you're responsible. And if like you said, one case, if somebody gets it in one pod, in one dorm, and it spreads, then we're going to have a big problem. So, yeah, absolutely.
But, you know, they don't care. They feel like people that are in prison are there for a punishment. So, again, they're not going to – I'd be surprised if they take them aspirin and Advil on time when they need it. They don't even take tissue on time when they need it. Like, I've been in jail before, and, like, they literally just do not care. So
you pay for all that.
Yes.
You pay for all that now.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how it goes. If you don't have any money, you in trouble.
Yeah, and that was one of the things that I was reading. The guy was saying that we can't have an abundance of anything anyway. So we're lacking stuff like soap, and we don't have but one roll of tissue. And we can't get bleach because it's contraband. We can't get hand sanitizer. That's contraband. And so it was just this huge lacking of stuff that they needed to stay safe. So it's definitely a health concern in prisons.
It was contraband to the corona, because I've gotten emails saying, hey, they're passing out bleach here, and these guys are laughing like, man, you know what's up going on, because that's contraband. They're giving us contraband. But guess what?
Yeah.
All bets are off. You got to do what you got to do now.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah,
and I appreciate the prisons that are doing that. Sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They're doing something. Absolutely.
But, Tawanda, I wanted you to talk a little bit about a few women in prison and some of the stuff that you've been getting via email.
Ah, man, that definitely, I wanted to try to log into an email really quickly. Yeah, these ladies, of course, I love and care about everyone that's on the inside. However, especially these women, they've just really been going through it. I'm not going to name any prisons today. We're going to grow through that process. But like I said, I have one person that I've been working and building with for a few years. She comes home on May 15th. And probably about 2 months ago, she got sick and started having some different issues. And it was really hard to even get to medical. She said they don't even really have anything in place to properly give medical help, unless you're almost dead, and then you're going out to the pre-war hospital. So she was talking about trying to get home due to getting compassionate release, but nothing has worked out yet in her actual favor. So I'm still trusting and believing in God's will that something will happen. There's another lady. Her name is Gwendolyn Levy. Gwendolyn Levy is about 71 years old. Come on, guys, 71.
Wow.
And, of course, just thinking about the years that she's been incarcerated, she's seen a lot. She's been through a lot. She's also filing for compassionate release. And she has a lot of different things going on. And I'm not really sure who she was yesterday or 10 years ago or 20 years ago. But now she's a mentor. She's an awesome person. A lot of ladies in there, they love her. They respect her. She does a lot of things for them. She's also filing for compassionate release. Today I talked to a young lady. Her name was Margaret. She's out of New Jersey. Her loved one is incarcerated in Alabama, and she also wants to get compassionate release. And she was emailing me, telling me the different medical problems that she has. And that's the biggest thing that a lot of these women in prison are going through and struggling with. People have medical issues. And, you know, they feel like, hey, I'm already sick. This is happening. They don't really have proper medical care here, so I'm doomed. And they're getting discouraged. And guess what? And families are even more discouraged. One thing that's horrible, it's worse already to be a female that's in prison with medical conditions, but to have a family that loves you and wondering, oh, my gosh, you know, what's going to happen with that. I was just looking at with Ms. Levy. She's saying she submitted her information. She said on March 24th, I will be submitting an emergency compassionate release request based partly on the national pandemic and the president's declaration of a national emergency. I will be using comments garnered from emails received by me from you, okay, that deal with the issues of incarcerated elderly population and our vulnerability to this coronavirus. I have also followed the guidelines for submission under the FSA. I will keep you abreast of my 30-day guideline for a response from the warden, Miss Patricia Bradley. To no avail, not to mention elderly or the FBOP preparation to deal with this disaster in Trump's new briefing today, in spite of having an Attorney General Barr on the podium. I continue to keep us in my prayers as a progress. And let me say this to anyone also that's listening, because people do have a chance and an opportunity to file for compassionate release. And most people are looking to go and hire attorneys and other legal professionals to do this. And you can if you want to, if you feel like you need to. But this initial process is something the person can do. And I just want to talk really quickly, if I could, take another minute and just explain, if you have a loved one that's in the federal prison and they want to file for compassionate release, if you contact us and send your email address, I'll email this process to them and let them be able to file. And the very first thing they need to do is make a request to the warden stating why they want and why they feel like they're eligible for compassionate release, including their age, any medical reasons. The warden has 30 days to respond. And remember, documentation, you have to have that. Hey, on March the 26th, I sent this to the warden. Have your proof that you sent that, because it's 30 days from that date. If there's no response, then you have to go through your other administrative remedies by filing the BP8, BP9, BP9, BP10, BP11, and we can give you all of that information. But like I said, you have not because you asked not. So we're giving this information to anyone that feels like they're eligible for the compassionate release. Thank you, Beyonce.
Thank you. Lisa, have you been up to date on any emails, anything you wanted to add from prisoners you've been speaking with?
No. I mean, she completed that well. I mean, I've been reading them. I haven't gotten them personally, but it's disturbing. It really is.
I would agree. I'm looking through a few now. Some that I'll just read out a few of these. I won't say the name or where they're from. It says, I would indeed communicate with you this weekend. Send the number. In addition, as everyone can imagine, us as inmates are already separated from the world. The safeguards have to be at the entrance to all institutions to make sure the virus does not easily enter the prison system, because that will cause catastrophic effects. Just having a temperature reader will help by each individual taking his temperature before they enter the institution. That would be a tremendous help. But, of course, that's not being done. So that guy was worried just because he didn't feel like there was any structure going on. But another guy said, so an update here, we are on a split yard and split unit. There is two buildings, and each building has three floors, which make up one unit. So we all get 1 hour break a day, but one floor at a time. We all go to chow one floor at a time. My bunk is less than 6 feet from me, which is obvious, and my neighbor on each side is at least 3 feet from me. Over 60 people in the room, and it is set up like a military barracks. One of the most unsanitary prisons I've been at. Bathroom and showers are filthy. I am surprised people don't contract staff on a daily basis. This building is old. No washer or dryer, so you can imagine the laundry bags that's just hanging over the bunks that create a smell of stuff mixed with gym socks in the unit. There are 2 days to send out laundry, and most of the time it comes back wet. There's a bus coming with inmates to be quarantined. They are to be placed in one of the buildings. Oh, yeah, no more building use until farther notice. And I guess he's talking about the rec building. The room that they were supposed to be in is right next to the unit team that I am in. Sure, they got freaked out, so they moved them over. Hope this was insightful. So there's definitely one story of a guy that's just in a terrible condition. We got to remember, man, these emails are words, but these are true people in true situations in desperate need of
help. That's
right. And like I said, man, I just pray that Christian leadership steps up and starts making the right decisions and help these guys and women out. Tawanda, you want to add anything about that?
Yeah, I actually just pulled up an email. I've been sending, like, different blogs and stuff on News Alert to people that's on our email list. And I sent something on the 25th, which was yesterday, a news article that said, despite coronavirus warnings, Federal Bureau of Prisons still transporting inmates. And it talked about, over the weekend, three inmates in the Bureau of Prisons tested positive for the coronavirus. Two tested positive at FCC Oakdale in Louisiana, and one at MDC New York. And then I look at a few emails that I got. One was last night. One was today at 8:30. He says, yes, they are still transferring inmates. They have us on lockdown. We seem to be the only compound on lockdown as well. They are not giving us proper cleaning supplies. And another email that came in this morning at 8:20, this guy at FCI Gilmer says, they came in here last night in hazmat uniforms 20 deep, and another bus will be coming in today. They're still transferring. And, again, I don't know the process. I don't know the procedure. But why in the hell people are still being transferred from one place to the next, I have no idea. That does not seem too logical to me. But, again, I don't know.
Not at all.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, that's crazy. And let me read
this last one. We're waiting on the Federal Bureau. We're waiting on them to make a decision because that's the big dog, and I think most people will follow them after they make that decision. And now that it's there, they need to act because a lot of the state prisons and jails, I think, will follow suit.
Yeah, let me. This last one comes from FCI Cumberland. That's in Maryland. He says, "Well, the BOP is moving." The BOP is moving sneakily and not being transparent with their moves because here at FCI Cumberland, an entire top row in housing was cleared out and some inmates were brought here on Monday the 23rd and are under some type of quarantine, not even informing the general population of why they were brought here. If any of them tested positive, we're in contact with someone that tested positive. Are we in danger? They haven't even tested the officers according to what some of the officers have told me. And we know that because we've also asked. And I thought they were already quarantined from society, and the only people that could bring it to us would be the officers until now that they have brought some other inmates in. We are in danger of catching it. And again, this is what somebody's emailing. I'm not there, but it's just really interesting.
Yeah. I wanted to transfer into some of these questions that we have for both of you. Melissa, you can start. But why do you choose to help prisoners?
Just because I was one of those people that was headed down that road. I'm surprised I didn't end up in prison. I guess the few times I went to jail kind of straightened me out, but then I have my best friend in there. And, you know, I got family there. Like, a lot of my loved ones are there. So, and again, like, you don't always have people. And then sometimes, you know, like, you'll get a loved one to call you, and then you'll have to send a message through somebody else just because they don't have the resources. So just being there and being able to help because I feel like everybody deserves a second chance and everybody deserves for their story to be heard.
Thank you. Yeah, that's powerful. Tawanda, you?
Okay, I'm sorry. I was over here trying to triple task. Well, you know, it's so funny you asked that, Deontay, because I remember when I was in probably like sixth grade, I had a cousin that he lived in Connecticut and he got sentenced to prison. He got sentenced to 20 years. And he ended up doing 8. And I used to write him letters probably like once a month. And I was sending probably like $10 when I had it. You know, I didn't have much allowance, but I was sending what I had in a little money order. And when he got out of prison, he said, "Man, you're not just my cousin, you're my best friend. Like, you're the only person that stayed down with me these whole 8 years mm-hmm. and, like, sent money and wrote." And I was like, "What do you mean? Like, you're my family. You were in jail. Like, regardless of what you did, I love you. So, you know, I'm going to do what I could." And I thought that everyone else was doing the same thing. But you know, I guess I didn't really understand that that's not what happened. So to fast forward about 13, 14 years ago, I was looking for a good friend of mine from my hometown, and I found out that he had actually went back to prison. And I'm from South Carolina originally, and he had actually got locked up in Georgia. And so when I reached out to him, and I said, "Hey, well, what's going on? Do you need anything?" And blah, blah, blah. Of course I need something. So I started writing them, sending them letters, and looking at different ways I could be able to help him. And, of course, Lissa, you know, and Deontay, you know, too, when you help somebody you care about, they got a cellie, they got a friend, they got a brother, they got a homie, mm-hmm. somebody who doesn't have family, who doesn't have resources. So next thing I knew, I was helping the cellie, I was helping this person, I was helping that person. He had me helping like 10, 15 different people. I mean, it was simple stuff like, "Can you call the warden for this?" Or, "Can you do that? Can you write a letter? Can you help my mom put money in my book?" Just different stuff like that. I've always been an advocate. Like, for over 25 years, I've done something to help people. But that's how I actually got started, because someone who I know, someone who I love was in prison, and people who they cared about. And it's kind of just been a trickling effect. And here we are 13 plus years later still doing it. And the last thing I want to say about that is this. I never really knew. You know how you can walk out your door and be into like a new city, a new state, like, you know, you have the state line. I never really knew that it was so many people in prison. I didn't know that this was like fallen people that people forgot about. I didn't know that when people went to prison, it was like out of sight, out of mind. Like, they don't exist. They're dead to the world. I did not know that until I started becoming up close and personal to people living this lifestyle and living this journey and saying, "Hey, I've been in prison. I haven't seen my mama in 10 years. I haven't seen my kids. Mm-hmm. I haven't had a visit." And then I was like, "Oh, my God," because I did not know.
Wow. You know, that kind of transitions us into the next thing I wanted to ask, because the question is, if you could talk to the families, what should they know about their loved ones in prison? And Tawanda, if you could start us off with that one.
Well, I'm going to tell you, and I know Lissa, we're having a best friend there. She definitely has stories as well. But let me tell you, I remember when I first started working with prisoners, I got a letter one time from a guy. And, you know, I get all types of letters. And people, you know, people can feel like they can trust you and tell you stuff because, you know how men are sometimes. Y'all don't want to, like, let people see the other side. But he said, "This is my 10th year in prison, and it's been 10 years of tears." And I was like, "Wow." He's like, "I would never tell anybody else this. Please never share this letter with anyone." But it was a guy talking about how he really messed up and how he left his wife, left his kids. And he was so heartbroken because he felt like he failed them. And the thing that I would say to families is the reason this organization is called Another Chance is because in life, sometimes we do deserve another chance, because I learned a long time ago, we got our second chance when we was about 2 or 3 or 5 or 10. This is another chance, because you can't even really count it. You understand what I'm saying? It's about another chance, because it's also another opportunity. And in life, we fall short. We make mistakes. We don't do everything that's right. So in prison, they go through a lot. Almost every day for the last 13, 14 years, I've been getting emails and talking to somebody that's incarcerated and hearing all types of stories. Some people are so blessed that they do have family support. And then you have some, they don't have anybody. And then you have some people that's been incarcerated for 10, 15, 20 years. Guess what? People pass away. People fall off because out of sight, people go on with their life. And they're going through hell. They're going, modern day, what, slavery. They're going through hell. Everything in prison costs. From the tissue to commissary to getting T-shirts to getting boxes, everything, because they turn it into, "We're going to house you here. We're going to take your money. We're going to let you work a job and pay you 7 cents. And your family's going to spend all their money sending to us to be able to get you stuff. And they're going to pay all these fees for phones." It's really horrible. Families, hopefully, if you have someone that's in prison and that you care about them, find a way to connect with them and reconnect. Let them call you as much as you can. Send them letters. It's okay to still send letters. Go visit. Find out how they're doing. Send them a book. Find out if they have any skills and talents, because there are still things they can do from prison. It doesn't have to be out of sight, out of mind. We work with some amazing men and women in prison that's written books, that they draw, that they create, and it's really just amazing. So that's the thing. And a lot of times guys and ladies in prison go through stuff. They don't want to tell families because they don't want to burden them. They don't want them to be upset. They don't want to scare them anymore. But sometimes connecting with people who's going through the same thing, it helps us help them, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Gary,
you
took everything
to
I thought I wanted to say. I said to him, like, you just took it all, because, I mean, like, that's true. And, like, I can't even add anything to that, but speaking from my own personal experience, like my friend, her family is Jehovah's Witness, and, you know, she's been there 12 years already, and she thought she was getting out and she got to stay. But before she went, the stuff that she did, it was to get attention. She felt like her parents didn't love her, like she was stealing cars, going to the store, stealing, just doing all type of crazy stuff. And then, you know, one thing led to another, and then it was like the big boom, you got to do this time. And it's like her family, they don't stay connected. Like they reach out to her through me, and I reach out to her through her girlfriend, and it's just like it's just a pattern, and like it's I can't even describe it. Like it's awful. And like T said, just stay connected. Like that's, I feel like that's the least people can do, because they have nobody behind those walls.
Yeah, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. Definitely one thing I think about is definitely just being that hope for someone who, you don't want an inmate sitting in there already feeling disconnected from the world and feel like his family or her family doesn't even care about him. So it's definitely important to be calling, to be putting money on books, to just letting them know that somebody loves them, somebody cares, to make sure they have hope. So that's a big deal. Definitely
that's
for
right.
My brother. Yeah.
Absolutely.
One question I thought about, and if you could chime in on this, send it to Mr. Wanda, was, so why should a person who doesn't have a connection with anyone in prison care about this community? How can they help this community if they don't have a personal connection?
Let me tell you, I don't know what made you ask that question, but let me tell you this. When we first started Another Chance, we used to have conference calls for about 2 years, 3 years. And every Sunday night, we would have an overview call talking about what we're doing, why we're doing it, et cetera, et cetera. And I'll never forget one of the guys that was in prison, he had sent his cousin's number. I think he said she was a dentist. Anyway, I can't remember what it was. But anyway, he wanted her to come find out about what we're doing. And she said, I'm a professional. I'm educated. I don't deal with criminals. I don't really know why you all invited me to this call. And the person that referred her, she said he was like a third or fourth cousin. He wasn't even a quote-unquote real cousin. And she just could not believe that, you know, she didn't really know what it had to do with her. This is the thing. And, again, it's really about, you know, people not knowing. You know, when we don't know better, we don't do better. Prison affects everyone. It affects everyone. And it affects everyone, not just because you're taxpaying citizens. It affects everyone because this is the world we live in. And you could be one step from a car accident where you kill someone. Someone could do something, and you could do something that you can't come back from. Or somebody could be coming home from prison and need a job and need an opportunity when we are aware. You understand what I'm saying? So it's not just about, oh, I have friends in jail, so I'm a criminal too. Because people that are ignorant, they think that. But if we care about people and we're not so apathetic, if we can find ways to work together, we can help each other. I have plenty of people who I know and deal with. They've never been to prison. They don't really know many people in prison, but they know thousands because they know me. And now they are agent for change. They don't mind helping. They have businesses. They have different opportunities. They don't mind hiring someone who's a felon. They don't mind telling someone in their family or network, hey, won't you hire this guy and give him a job? Because people in prison aren't as bad. People make mistakes. People that deserve another chance. It's about education, because when a person has paid their debt to society and they come home, we shouldn't continue to treat them like they are an inmate, because they're home. They are returning citizens. So we as a society need to become more conscious and more aware of how we all can work together to help that man or woman coming home from prison. And guess what? And the same thing to help prevent people from going to prison. We should treat people better, period.
Absolutely. Yeah. Lisa, did you want to add anything to that?
No, I don't want to add anything.
Yeah, that's a huge point for sure. Definitely, even tagging on with this coronavirus thing, there are about 2.3 million inmates. So if that pandemic hits the prisons and tears through the prison system, you can imagine how much that will affect the United States on the outside. So definitely not something to neglect, to act like it's not going to affect the prisons, and it won't affect the people outside of the prisons once it gets in there, because it definitely will. Many families will be grieving, but also the virus will continue to spread more if it does spread throughout the prisons like that. So it's definitely something for everyone to be mindful of, for sure.
Absolutely.
Are there many companies that help prisoners?
There are
I can't
a few
think
companies.
Any.
Well, yeah, there are actually a couple. I'm talking to a lady tomorrow. I'm not sure what she actually does. I know another lady on the inside told me about her, and she takes Bibles to the prisons, and she builds with the women, and she prays with them, and she does a lot of different things. And the women on the inside have been raving about her. And there's other organizations and nonprofits. I can't tell you the name of any right now. However, we're looking to make contact with most companies and make sure we can verify what services they're actually offering, and we will be able to add that on the website so people can be able to take advantage of seeing how they can help their loved one on the inside by connecting with a good company that truly does care about prisoners.
What are some things that Another Chance is trying to do for prisoners coming out of prison?
That's a great question. One of the things we're actually in the process of doing right now is developing a transition program. A few years ago, we were able to work with a couple of companies in Georgia that were willing to help returning citizens. We're looking to do that again in a couple of different states, as well as we're looking into different programs for housing and seeing what all we could actually do to help have a full transition plan. And the biggest thing is not just working with someone that's coming home next week, but start working with the person 36 months before they actually come home. So let's say, for example, we have John Doe that comes home in 24 months from now. We'll find out, you know, why are you in prison, making sure you can stay away from that, you know, what is it that you want to do, what's your family and support system like, and then start building with them. Because, unfortunately, some people come home to the same situation. Some people come home and they don't have a place to go. Or some people come home and family is still, you know, going through it. You understand what I'm saying? So that's one of the biggest goals that we have for 2020. And we know that even though we're delayed and in right now, we're working on developing a transition program to help people 36 months until they get home, and doing partnerships with different companies to offer jobs, looking at opportunities for housing, building skills, and as well as right now we're also developing different opportunities of what a person can do when they come home. Let's say, for example, a man or woman comes home from prison next week, next month. Nothing against McDonald's or Burger King, because I worked at McDonald's in college, but, you know, a person can't really live off $10 an hour. I don't even know if they get paid $10 an hour. So sometimes entrepreneurship is going to be a key. So looking at those that want to get their CDL, commercial driver's license, and there's some people that want to even start a trucking business. You know, real estate is another good business to actually get into. But just looking so this person can have options. You understand? And that's the biggest thing that we're looking for, to give a person every chance possible to not have to be in the percentage of recidivism, because a lot of people that come home, over half of them do go back. And most go back because they don't come home in anything.
Yeah, for sure. That environment that you cultivate for an inmate that's getting ready to get home, it's so important. If they're going back to the same streets, the same partners, doing the same thing, then you can't expect them to be fruitful in that environment. They're going to go back to doing the same old habits. So it's very important that we are trying to create something for prisoners when they come out, to have a different avenue to take when they get home. So that's super important.
Yeah, Absolutely.
One of the last questions. Yeah.
Let me say this really quickly, because one thing, Deontay, I have people in emails tell me, yo, I'm coming home in 2 months. And I say, well, what's the deal with the plan? And you know what they say? I'll worry about that when I get home. I'm like, oh, Lord have mercy. Oh, that's the wrong thing to say. And I'm saying to myself, you will be back, unfortunately, if you don't really get something in place, especially if you're not going home to someone that understands and knows how to have certain things in place as well. So we're definitely working on that, and we're looking to find other companies and organizations and agencies that already have that in place that can help as well.
Yeah. You can't break the cycle if you don't break the habit. So
you better believe it. You better believe it.
Yeah. So how are prisoners able to communicate with you, Mr. Wanda, and families as well, with another chance?
Well, like, for example, in the state prison, their communication system is something called JPAY. And JPAY has been around for a while, but, of course, they've upgraded. They've added a lot of different things. So in addition to snail mail, you have the JPAY. In the state prisons, you also can make phone calls. They have the phone to where there's different companies like Securus and Global Telink to where you can get a plan. Like, you can say I'm going to put, like, $25 on my phone or $50, and your loved one can actually call based on that. I'm not sure how much the calls actually are. And, like, for example, if you use JPAY, you can spend, like, $10 and get, like, 20, 30 stamps. Your loved one on the inside can actually email you back and forth. They have to pay for a stamp, and you have to pay for the stamp, but that's how you communicate. And in a federal prison, same thing, basically. Their email system is called CoreLink. They pay to actually email back and forth, and whomever they actually email doesn't pay anything, and then they actually can call to get 300 minutes a month to be able to call their loved one. So that's how, mostly between CoreLink, JPAY, snail mail, and those that have access to using the phone.
But you know they got 200 extra minutes due to the coronavirus, right?
Yes. Oh my God, wasn't that amazing?
Yes, that was. That was really amazing.
Yeah, and I heard guys say.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Now I was just saying, I thought that was great. That was a great gesture for the prison to give them 200 extra minutes. That was amazing. And people have been burning it up because I've been getting a lot of calls.
How is there a certain email they're reaching out to you from? Say if a family wanted to contact Another Chance Foundation or a prisoner wanted to contact Another Chance Foundation, how do they do that?
Another great question. The email address to contact us is A as in Apple, C as in Charlie, the number 2, BTG, that's A, C, the number 2, BTG, at yahoo.com. You can email us from the federal prison, state prison, or anyone that's out in the community, or you can call or text area code 843-879-8361. Once again, that's area code 843-879-8361.
Thank you. Really, a last question to both of you. Both of you mentioned your faith a little bit at the beginning of this talk. I just wanted to kind of end with the Lord in mind and what he's doing in the midst of everything we're going through in the world today. So, listen, if you could speak just about what you think God is sharing with the people of the world today in the midst of everything that's going on with the coronavirus or any source of inspiration you could see into prisoners or families in the midst of your faith and how you're growing in the midst of everything.
You know, I laugh when you ask that because as we do this more often, everybody will get to know me and the listeners included, and they will be like, this is one crazy, you know. But really, I feel like God is, he's showing us. It's in Revelations, and I feel like seals are being broken, and I feel like if people turn from their wicked ways and repent and pray to Jesus, like, this can calm down a little bit. And, I mean, that's just how I really feel about it. And as far as families and all of that, I just want everybody to be encouraged because, again, God is in control. And not trying to put a color on anything, but black people have been through so much, and I feel like this little coronavirus, the COVID, like, this is not going to take us out. We done lived through so much. Humans, you know, in general, have lived through so much. So I just want everybody to stay encouraged and keep praying and keep pressing on.
Thank you.
And keep pressing on. I thought she was going to start singing Press My Way after that. But what I feel that God is saying, and God actually spoke to me earlier today about something, peace be still and know that I am God. And that's the thing. Regardless of what happens, regardless of what we go through, God is still God. And we cannot be distracted and take our eyes off of God. And guess what? We have to have faith. We have to trust, and we have to believe, and we have to stand on God's word. And if we pray and we continue to pray, regardless, we're going to make it through. And better days and blessed days are going to come. So that's what I see. And sometimes things are allowed to shake up a little bit because we forget that God is still God.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I'm at with that. And I'm excited about
it. I like
that.
Absolutely. Thank you both for sharing that. I'm definitely on the same page. I think God is definitely in control. He's using this time for us to really dig into him. He wants us to know he's in control. I think he's humbling a lot of people right now, but I also think his power is going to be shown in healing and financial breakthroughs and all kind of things. So I just pray for believers that we really use this time to grow in our faith and our trust in him, and lead out in the communities as we serve others and be the love that Christ wanted us to be. So I thank you both for being on this call with me tonight. Once again, this is Another Chance Foundation. I'm Big Serge. You have Mr. Wanda and Ms. Lissa here, and we're all about helping people, being the bridge between the community and the prison. I'll let you guys share any last talk or any last thing that you want to share with the community that's going to be listening to this.
Well, I just want to touch on one thing. I heard you say something about the believers, and I just want to reach out to the non-believers because, you know, they call me an evangelist. So even to the non-believers, like, it's time to get on the right foot. It just is, and that's all I wanted to say.
Thank you.
And the last thing I really want to say is I thank God for every opportunity. I thank God for chance meetings. I thank God to have allowed our path to cross because no one would believe that 2 months ago, 2 months ago or 3 months ago, we didn't even know each other. And that's just an act of God because, like we were talking about today on the conference call that we have, when good people connect, when good people who know the Lord connect, and we have a vested interest in helping others, you watch. You look at God, and we are an example, and we are a vessel, and we are available for God to use us. And guess what? Our best days and our blessed days are still yet to come. And when this thing goes away and when this thing turns around, God will definitely get the glory. And I'm looking forward to it. And I'm excited about the new people that's going to join us and partner with us to help prisoners, to help families, to help the children, to help the people, because we have to work together because this is our opportunity for unity.
Absolutely. We want to thank you both again for coming on and talking. Thanks to all those who are listening to this, man. Feel free to reach out to us. Let us know if you want anything talked about on this radio podcast. We love you all. I pray that God be with you, keep you safe, keep you humble, and may he grow you and be prosperous in this time. Y'all be blessed.
Thank you so much. God bless you.
Bye.
Good night.
Good night.